With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for turning on that radio this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Friday, August 11th. Coming up in today's show, will the U.S. be allowed to send more potatoes to Mexico? We'll have an update on that. And support for tax reform that benefits U.S. farmers and ranchers. But first, we start off today with Taylor Hillman.
A few media reports lately said California will be increasing its avocado production, hinting at more acres being planted, but that's not exactly the case. California Avocado Commission Research Program Director Tim Spann said a little more production is in fact coming, but it's coming from the same acreage.
Right. So what we're seeing is, you know, a combination of things. So the drought sort of moved a lot of people that have large old trees that really weren't that productive. The drought sort of instigated them to either stump those trees or remove them, and they're coming back in and replacing those trees, or the stump trees are coming back into production. So we're seeing a sort of rejuvenation of the industry, if you will. Not really an increase in acreage, but by having younger trees, they're producing better, and so we're seeing a little bit of an uptick in production.
Spann says that does mean higher density compared to older plantings, but not higher density to the extreme that growers are looking at in other crops.
You know, some of those old large groves could be, you know, anywhere from 50 down to maybe 25 trees per acre in extreme cases. And so if you come back in, even if you replant that at a kind of a standard density of 110 trees per acre, you're going to get a much better production. There's some growers who are tightening up the spacing, you know, maybe in the 15 by 15 range. There's a few growers playing with even tighter spacings, but that's really more the exception than the rule right now.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
And we go now to Brian German.
The annual Rice Field Day is coming up on Wednesday, August 30th at the Rice Experiment Station in Biggs, California. The Field Day is sponsored by the California Cooperative Rice Research Foundation and University of California with support from many agricultural businesses. During the registration period taking place between 7:30 and 8:30, participants will have an opportunity to observe demonstrations and review a weedy rice display that will be available. The program will officially begin at 8:30 with a general session that includes a Rice Research Trust report. Field tours of research will include medium, short, and long grain projects, the Rice Pathology Project, along with new and experimental herbicides. The Rice Experiment Station is located at 955 Butte City Highway, approximately 2.5 miles west of Highway 99. The August 30th Rice Field Day allows observation of the progress of research being conducted at the experiment station. I'm Brian German for AgNet West.
A new poll shows a large majority of American voters support tax reforms, including some changes that would help America's farm and ranch families. The survey, conducted by Morning Consult, found that 7 out of 10 American voters agreed passing tax reforms should be an important priority for Congress. More than half the voters supported specific tax reform provisions that would be a benefit for farmers and ranchers. Some of the provisions included allowing farmers to deduct machinery purchases in the year they're made, decreasing capital gains taxes, and eliminating the death tax. Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall says Americans are ready for tax reform. He says, quote, "Many Americans know the toll that taxes take on our farm and ranch families." He says Congress must take action to provide tax relief. Farmers and ranchers will be sharing that message with lawmakers until the job is done. Tax rates are a key area ripe for reform. The Morning Consult poll shows 63% of respondents agree that federal income tax rates are too high. 2 out of 3 voters in the survey say farmers and ranchers should get special tax treatment because of the challenges and risks that are specific to agriculture. It's never too early for farm direct businesses to craft and implement social media marketing campaigns to boost sales during the holiday season or anytime. Here's Rod Bain with more.
Farm direct business operators want to take advantage of the holidays to sell your goods through the traditional and internet markets? Then start planning your marketing campaigns now.
We've got to look at raising customer awareness that we're even there to kind of cut through all the chatter that's out there on the internet and other advertising sources.
Ginger Myers of University of Maryland Extension adds that with 24/7 availability of online shopping and the blending together of timelines for various holidays and events, such as Labor Day, fall season, as well as Thanksgiving and Christmas, Farm Direct businesses need to develop social media marketing plans to keep their businesses in front of consumers and to emphasize particular products.
perhaps you're going to offer a special that only your social media folks have access to, buy one, get one, or run a contest. This is a great time of the year if you're doing some kind of fall decoration or you have a new baby animal on the farm, run a naming contest.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
A Mexican judge recently made a decision to continue the ban on importing U.S. potatoes into most of Mexico. Imports are currently allowed in land close to the U.S., the Mexican border, but are prohibited from going further into the country. The National Potato Council says the ruling ignores science and interferes with the role of the Mexican Plant Health Regulatory Authority. Experts from Mexico and USDA, as well as third-party experts, have all reviewed the impacts of importing fresh American potatoes into the entire Mexican countryside. The Plant Health Authority has published a pest risk assessment that shows any possible risk from entry of fresh U.S. potatoes can be mitigated. The Potato Council says the ruling will not limit the movement of U.S. potatoes into the legal 26-kilometer zone that starts at the U.S. border. The judge's ruling is expected to be appealed by all parties with a direct interest in the case. U.S. potatoes were approved first for access into the entire Mexican country back in 2013, but Mexican potato growers filed a legal challenge to that action. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. This week's Western View is coming up after the break. We will be back in just a moment.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs, reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Okay, Mike is calling from Davenport. Go ahead, Mike. You're on Soil Talk.
The engine isn't performing like it should, and I'm wondering what's going on.
All right, couple of questions, Mike. Do you have high porosity in aggregates? Is there a porous medium for gas exchange?
I don't know.
Well, hey, look, Mike, if you want performance, you got to find out if it's good under the hood, huh?
Okay, how?
Stop by your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today, Mike. They can help you supercharge your soil and get that engine cranking it out for you.
Find out what you can do to maximize your farm's production engine. It's soil. Through soil health management systems, you can lower input costs, increase yields, and drought protect your farm. Stop by your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
When someone asks you about the safety of GMO foods, ask them if they know about Teosinte. Teosinte is a very early version of corn, and we could say it was the first GMO food in the world. It wasn't created in a sterile lab, however. It was selectively grown and developed by the Native Americans in Central America, long before the Spanish invasion there or the English and French in the north. The leaves and stalk of Teosinte look like a corn stalk with the typical long-pointed leaves. However, the seed pod is different, as Teosinte does not grow a cob. and the seed kernels are harder than corn. But the seeds are still useful food, and the stalk is sweet like sugar cane. For thousands of years, these small hard seeds of teosinte were a staple of the Mayan diet. Sometime around 6000 BC, the Mayans began cultivating their teosinte on farms instead of collecting it in the wild. The Mayan culture grew to be advanced and used sophisticated farming technology, including extensive canals and ditches for irrigations. They applied their technology to mutate teosinte into a more useful plant. As they did that, the farmers used selective breeding, and gradually it became a radically different plant. They saved the seeds of those that were the larger, tastier, or easier to grind. They learned to hybridize, and by 4000 BC, teosinte had become maize, with cobs an inch or more long. Thus, maize was the first genetically modified foods. Okay, they didn't use a lab and slice the genes and put them back together to create the crop. What they did was they took many generations to gain the changes that they wanted. But it was the same net effect, just stretched out over hundreds of years. Today's corn has been even more improved, with better yields, better cobs, and many more uses. Corn is not alone in being engineered by our ancestors. Almost everything we grow has been hybridized. The famous scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson said it well. Practically every food you buy in a store for consumption by humans is genetically modified food. There are no wild, seedless watermelons. Since early times, people have systematically improved all of the foods we eat. It's artificial selection, and everything tastes better, is less expensive, grows more efficiently, or is healthier because of it. I'm Lynn Wilcox. That's the Western View from AgNet West.
Well, in today's livestock news, one issue that is important to agriculture and cattle producers is international trade. That's according to Tracy Bruner, a media past president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
We are so good at producing food here in the United States that we need access to export markets on a level playing field. And so the cattlemen's message is very strong that we needed to stay engaged in world trade. And that message resonated even in, through the election and after the election. We've seen good progress in foreign trade. International markets are opening up some. We're disappointed that we're not able to stay involved in TPP. Our organization is very, very involved in this updating of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's very important to us. And one big item that your listeners are likely aware of, we've been able to open our Chinese market to American beef. It was closed for 13 years. So a lot happening in international trade, and it's all positive for the American beef industry.
And he knows that growing populations in countries across seas is an important destination for U.S. beef.
We enjoy the safest and most highest quality food supply anywhere on earth here in the United States. And this growing global economy, the emerging consumers in the nations with fast-growing economies like the Pacific Rim and China in particular, those expanding middle-class consumers have more income and they want a higher quality diet. And that higher quality diet means more protein, and the highest quality protein in the world is American beef. And so we're happy to have that market access now restored, and we're anxiously looking forward to supplying more and more Chinese consumers and other consumers all around the world with our high-quality American beef.
And Bruner says they look forward to continuing international trade efforts with the new administration and Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue.
We support Perdue and are ready to help him as he works with the Foreign Trade Office to open more markets around the globe. As the Chinese market was opened, why our NCBA officers were there in China with Perdue and took part in the opening of the Chinese market. And cattlemen are really looking forward to expanded market access as well as a better business climate as we work to produce beef for the consumers of the world.
Again, that was NCBA President Tracy Bruner. And a quick reminder, the 30-day comment period on the EPA's proposal to withdraw the 2015 Waters of the U.S. or WOTUS rule is nearing an end. The deadline for comments is August 28th, and thus the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is urging landowners to make their comments now. You can do so simply by going to regulations.gov/comment. But if you'd like to have a little help with a sample comment, you can go to the NCBA website. That's beefusa.org. BeefUSA.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Every grade school child is taught that farming feeds us. I don't suppose they're taught that agriculture is the biggest industry in the world, but here's something very few adults are aware of. Most of what our farmers grow is sold to other countries. It's known as agricultural exports. It's a big business. How big? Well, we know that it runs into the high billions of dollars, and every billion creates over 7,000 jobs for non-farm workers. Here's a stunning figure. U.S. agricultural exports created over a billion non-farm jobs in 2016. Another factor, Canada and Mexico, our neighbors, are two best customers. Together, they account for more than one-third of all we export. That's NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement. Criticized by some, but supported by most. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
The Propane Farm Incentive Program has been newly revised, taking it from a two-step process to one step, where farmers receive their application packet from the dealer when they purchase a piece of qualifying equipment. Cindy Zimmerman talks to Cinch Munson, Director of Agriculture Business Development at the Propane Education and Research Council, for more information.
I'm speaking with Cinch Munson, who's Director of Agriculture Business Development at the Propane Education and Research Council, or PERC. And Cinch, I understand that you just recently kind of streamlined the process for your Propane Farm Incentive Program and changed it up a little bit. So tell us about it.
At the beginning of 2017, we took a good look at the program and said, what can we do to make this program more streamlined and easier for that customer, the farmer, the ag operation, to participate in the program? And one of the things we looked at is, you know, what's the fewest number of steps, I guess, that we can make this work? And with that, we kind of landed on really a one-step process. And in the past, it's been a two-step process. You apply online, get a registration packet, fill out the packet. This year, we took some of that step one on ourselves and made it just a one-step process where you get a hard copy registration packet from your equipment dealer. And really, it's that simple. If you're looking at buying a qualifying piece of equipment and you can find what equipment qualifies or potentially qualifies at www.propane.com/farmincentive, talk to your equipment dealer, say, hey, is there an incentive available? If they happen to not know about the program, on that website, it has my contact information. That equipment dealer can contact me. We talk about it, make sure the equipment qualifies. It really just helps build that relationship between the salesperson and the customer, and we're involved in it. And at the end of the day, it just makes things easier for the ag operation.
Well, tell us about some of the incentives that are available for farmers.
You know, in the propane industry, one of the biggest growth areas right now are engine applications. Propane's a really good fuel. It's very clean. It has a lot of power in engine applications, whether that's vehicles or power generators or irrigation pumps. And within the ag market, we have incentives available for irrigation engines and prime power generation. And those are two of our main priorities, two areas that we're really focusing on because we know that propane has a lot of advantages for ag operations in those applications. We also have some incentives available for weed flaming as well as building heat, including greenhouse and animal heat. And a few available on grain dryers.
Well, taking a look at the irrigation engine specifically, I know that you also recently partnered with Origin Engines to develop some new propane engines for applications like irrigation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Origin Engines is a company out of Kearney, Nebraska, and they produce, you know, a number of different engines, but one line is they're industrial engines used in a number of applications, but in agriculture, we see a lot of them with water pumping as well as power generation. And, you know, Origin has a good line of engines, and they looked at the market and saw a need for some additional horsepower offerings. in a certain range. So they've brought to market a new 5.7 liter engine as well as a 6.2 liter engine, which is a very popular, common size of engine needed in the market. And, we're pretty excited to see that come to the market because more choices are always a benefit for the consumer.
Well, under the propane farm incentive program, it says you're offering for irrigation engines, for to go to propane irrigation engines, that the incentive is $300 for every liter of fuel displaced. Can you explain that?
That's right. Yeah, it's $300 per liter of displacement. So, to do super simple math, if we're going to say a 6 liter engine, take that times $300, there's an $1,800 incentive available on that engine, and depending on the size of the engine, that varies. And, so it's a good sized incentive on an engine that in most cases, in almost every case, costs considerably less than kind of the latest Tier 4 final diesel engine. So by choosing propane, you save money on the cost of the engine up front. Participating in the farm incentive program, you save even more money. And then the operating costs in those engines, we've seen over the last 5 years have, by using propane instead of diesel, an operation can save 30 to 50% on their operating costs. Mm-hmm. So it's really, there's a lot of positives and very, very few negatives to, getting a propane engine and using this incentive program to make it even more worthwhile.
Yeah, but as far as the incentive program is concerned, you've made it easier, but you only have a limited number of incentives available. So people need to move quickly, right?
I encourage people to definitely move quickly. Visit the website www.propane.com/farmincentive. You can see all the details there. And at the end of this year, who knows what's going to happen? This year, this program as it is going through the end of 2017 is the plan. So if anyone's considering it, I really encourage them to act soon and act this fall, and the sooner the better, because it's not unlimited fun.
All right, very good. Well, I think that wraps it up. Thank you very much, Cinch Munson with the Propane Education and Research Council. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Okay, Mike is calling from Davenport. Go ahead, Mike. You're on Soil Talk.
The engine isn't performing like it should, and I'm wondering what's going on.
All right, couple of questions, Mike. Do you have high porosity in aggregates? Is there a porous medium for gas exchange?
I don't know.
Well, hey, look, Mike, if you want performance, you got to find out if it's good under the hood, huh?
Okay, how?
Stop by your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today, Mike. They can help you supercharge your soil and get that engine cranking it out for you.
Hey, we're out of time, Mike. Hey, thanks for your call. Gotta go. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Soil Talk.
Find out what you can do to maximize your farm's production engine. It's soil. Through soil health management systems, you can lower input costs, increase yields, and drought protect your farm. Stop by your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. Brought to you by NRCS and this radio station.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs, in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. As the U.S. and companion nations in the North American Free Trade Agreement renegotiate this trade deal, what are some of the objectives for both our nation's negotiators and the American farm and food sectors when it comes to agricultural trade with Canada and Mexico? Rod Bain takes an in-depth look at ag-based objectives in the upcoming NAFTA modernization talks in this edition of Agriculture USA.
We are days away from the start of the first round of renegotiations of the North American Free Trade Agreement. And the U.S. Trade Representative's Office and U.S. negotiators have a list of objectives in modernizing this over three-decade-old trade deal with Canada and Mexico. The diverse farm and food sectors have voiced their opinions over the last few weeks what objectives for NAFTA renegotiation should be for agriculture, with the primary consideration being...
Please do no harm.
Do no harm.
Do no harm.
Do no harm to U.S. agriculture.
In the significant gains ag as a whole has made in terms of exports to Canada and Mexico. Yet there are some areas where farm and food leaders say modernization is needed. I'm Rod Bain. And a look at agricultural objectives for a modernized NAFTA. That's the subject of this edition of Agriculture USA. As part of the upcoming renegotiations of the North American Free Trade Agreement, the U.S. Trade Representative's Office announced last month the objectives the United States will pursue in its talks with Canada and Mexico. This specific list is a product of weeks of input from all stakeholders at NAFTA, including representatives from the farm and food industries. So what are some of the U.S. agricultural objectives connected to NAFTA renegotiation? First and foremost, maintaining existing reciprocal duty-free market access for ag goods. After all, according to Colorado Farm Bureau Federation President Don Shawcroft, agriculture is perhaps the U.S. industry that has benefited most from NAFTA.
A very significant increase of trade of U.S. agricultural products to Canada and Mexico, more than quadrupling the $8.9 billion in 1993 to $38.1 billion in 2016. That is overwhelming beneficial trade for the vast majority of U.S. farmers and ranchers and associated industries.
Yet there are some specific commodities that have faced challenges, both from a market access and a competition standpoint during NAFTA. For example, specialty crops. So Reggie Brown of the Florida Tomato Growers Exchange notes some of the positives for his industry within the U.S. NAFTA renegotiation objectives.
The objectives of the administration on improving the trade balance and reducing trade deficit within the NAFTA countries is a very positive one for us. We would like to see the trade laws in the United States, as does the administration, for anti-dumping and countervailing duty and safeguards being strongly enforced.
Many farm and food representatives agree with negotiation objectives that seek to eliminate non-tariff barriers, such as sanitary and phytosanitary measures, and technical barriers to trade. Ag industry representatives William Westman of the North American Meat Institute and Ben Connor of U.S. Wheat Associates discuss SPS and TBTs in the NAFTA renegotiation framework from objectives such as sound science and quicker response and resolution of such issues.
Adopt expanded WTO SPS standards to include creation of a rapid response mechanism, including tighter standards and deadlines for adverse import barriers. Enhanced enforcement mechanisms for unjustified SPS barriers. mitigate, eliminate technical barriers to trade to prevent non-tariff barriers that lack scientific merit.
With three countries that are relatively pro-trade, pro-science, we should take the opportunity to get the best rules that we can. Equivalence agreements, simultaneous approvals, standardized approval criteria could all help improve the trade facilitation framework around SPS concerns.
Melissa San Miguel of the Grocery Manufacturers Association notes how objectives include the aligning and streamlining of various rules and regulations for a modernized NAFTA.
The United States should pursue all opportunities in NAFTA to concretely align regulations among the United States, Canada, and Mexico to decrease the costs associated with unnecessary regulatory differences. The agreement should include commitments to implement the highest standards for good regulatory practice and should advance regulatory coherence and cooperation.
Perhaps the greatest objective for the U.S. ag sector within NAFTA renegotiations, although not specifically stated, is summed up in a common mantra of do no harm. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue explains it's not just about the increased exports and market access the current NAFTA has provided most of agriculture.
In many trade renegotiations or trade negotiations, the anxiety of our producers is that agriculture is always used as a retaliatory measure.
Compared to other sectors of a trade agreement, such as manufacturing, intellectual properties, or telecommunications, he is among those explaining to negotiators and the general public how the gains American agriculture has made through NAFTA has benefited other sectors of the U.S. economy, like manufacturing.
Because of agricultural products and value-added products, it creates manufacturing jobs.
This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.